Hello, I'm Daniel Simpson, the host of Ancient Futures. If you're hearing this, you're listening to a preview of an archived podcast. For the full conversation, go to ancientfutures.substack.com, the link is in the show notes, and become a paid subscriber. Or you can also sign up for a free 7-day trial with no obligation. If you already subscribe, however, you have access to everything via the website, where you can go to your account page to set up a feed to your favourite podcast app. Just follow the instructions at ancientfutures.substack.com/account. Now, everything is free at the time of release, so it's also possible to subscribe without any charge to get the latest episodes direct to your inbox, along with other interviews and things that I write. All of that does take time to produce, though, so while it's a labour of love, subscriber donations do help make it sustainable. But if you're not in a position to pay, just send me a message and we'll work something out. For now, on with the preview. Hello and welcome to Ancient Futures, where the time is always now. If we see things clearly, that is. Today, I'm talking to Jivana Heyman about his new book, The Teacher's Guide to Accessible Yoga. Now, that's a term he's been using since 2007, when he first trained disabled teachers. But it's also a much broader concept, and it's pointing to something subtler than modified postures, which is often what people understand as accessible yoga. Instead, it reveals that something is accessible through yoga, the imminent presence of one's innermost being. Now, as we discussed, that can set the bar quite high for teachers of yoga, but it is also aligned with traditional goals. However, taking those on board raises some other concerns about authenticity and about social justice questions, particularly whether cultural appropriation is a meaningful concept. So we do unpack that along with a few other things, such as Jivana's slogan, "If it's not accessible, it's not yoga," as well as the headline on an article he once wrote for Yoga Journal saying, "Yoga has always been political." Now, both of those are statements with which I instinctively wanted to quibble a bit, so we did have a good chat about what lies behind them, and Jivana shares some inspiring conclusions. Just quickly before we get started, though, if you're a fan of the podcast and would like to support it, please consider becoming a paying subscriber. To do that, just visit ancientfutures.substack.com, where you can also make one-off donations. And I'm deeply grateful to those who are already doing that. As I explained in a recent article that you can find on the site, you help make it possible to keep doing this work. For now, though, on with it. Let's explore what's accessible through yoga with Jivana Heyman. Jivana, welcome.
Hey.
Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's so nice to see you.
Well, likewise. And thank you also for sending me this, The Teacher's Guide to Accessible Yoga. It's been keeping me company all day. In fact, I've been also having a look back at some of your earlier writing and going back to the beginning with accessible yoga and seeing the journey you've been on in the last 10 years or so in the writing and producing of books. And before we dive into the new book and talk a little bit about some of the evolution of what you've been presenting, I'd just like to ask if you could clarify for all of the people who are listening what accessible yoga actually means.
That's actually one of the hardest questions I get, actually. It's funny because I think it depends on context a little bit, it's definitely a phrase that I came up with to define something that I was trying to share with the world, which was trying to show that we could make these teachings available to everyone. And I have a background in AIDS activism, and that really, through that work, my AIDS activism, I really became more conscious of ableism. And I started to see, in the 90s when I started teaching, I think that's when it was so clear that yoga was kind of turning to something else. And I was just really concerned. And so accessible yoga was just an effort to reframe or kind of state that yoga can be available to everyone.
And just to clarify, ableism meaning, yeah, sort of bias towards people who are physically capable of doing all sorts of manipulations of their body parts.
Yeah. And interesting, the other part of ableism that I think is really important in the yoga world is part of ableism is the idea that disabled people need to be fixed or changed.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of a core element of contemporary practice, this idea of, you know, fixing us and turning us into some kind of something else, right? Like becoming something else. Yeah. So that's it. But the other thing about accessible yoga, I would just say, is that to me, I'm really, as you know, I'm very interested in practicing yoga, like being a practitioner, and the spiritual aspects actually are what really draw me, and philosophy as well. And I feel like people think of accessible yoga mostly as how to adapt asana, and that's a big part of what I do. But I just want to say, I think there's more to it than that, you know, that to me, it's about finding a way to help people get access to some of those deeper aspects of yoga.
Oh, thank you for clarifying all of that. And that line really about, you know, not fixing people really stood out to me. If I remember rightly, it was an excerpt you just ran in Yoga Journal from the book, which focused on that, the whole sort of challenge as a teacher of, I guess, being confronted with people who seem like they've got things that you can do something with, and to be okay with just letting them be who they are rather than assuming that you know in the first place what's wrong in inverted commas with them, and let alone that you can put it in inverted commas again right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it feels like yoga can be used, you know, for kind of whatever purpose we want. I mean, we tend to, you know, I do that too. I'll take responsibility for what I'm doing too, which is kind of framing it for to fit into my worldview. And I think that's happened quite a lot, you know, in contemporary practice, that it kind of goes along with this idea of, I don't know, like in the wellness world, that we're trying to fix and become something, you know, that if we have the right clothing and if we're on the right beach or something, then we'll be happy. You know, this idea of attaining something, that's really kind of a marketing ploy, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, no one ever, you know, failed to get rich by promising other people that they would get in some way enriched.
Exactly. Right. And so I think there's been such an impact on yoga from that, and literally from marketing, you know, conscious, well, maybe not conscious, like, but from marketing people working for like clothing companies and wellness brands that are showing us that you can get something that you don't have if you change. And I don't think that's what yoga is necessarily about. I mean, yoga is definitely about evolving, but maybe it's, or devolving, connecting back to something that we have within us. And I feel like that's really the core teaching that's lost, this idea that we already have it, we're fine. Like part of us is unchanged and unaffected by anything. And that's what I love about yoga, you know, this kind of focus on the, I hate to say focus on the positive, but this idea that we're okay, you know. And I think that my new book is an effort to help support yoga teachers in reframing their work a little bit, you know, away from that.
Well, one of the ways in which you reframe your own role, which really stood out for me, it was very powerful, in fact, so much that I wrote it down, is a line about, you know, in the context of spiritual bypass, you're talking about, you know, the fact that actually it's important as a yoga teacher to really acknowledge that we might be struggling. And in fact, you say yoga teachers are often people who are struggling with life, but doing it in a conscious way. And so stopping any pretense of being, you know, we've got it all under control, and actually admitting, you know, we're in this mess together. And what we're trying to do is make peace with our situation as far as we can. Yeah, coming back to the old serenity prayer, changing what we can do something about while also, you know, making our peace with what we can't. So yeah, I was curious to hear how that shows up for you as a teacher of accessible yoga. What way do you feel that you're struggling with life?
Wow. Well, I mean, first, I just want to agree that it seems like, I don't want to say that yoga teachers are maybe the messiest people I know, but, you know, it's not far from that, to be honest. I mean, I'm surrounded by them. You know, I love yoga teachers dearly, but part of it is just that we're so messy, and I include myself, like we're just human. I think what it is that makes someone a yoga, maybe not even a yoga teacher, but a yoga practitioner is an awareness of that, you know, just an awareness that there's something there's something not right. Maybe it's suffering, you know, that we're suffering in a more conscious way. And we think, oh, I want to do something about that. Like you said, change what we can change. For myself, I mean, you know, yeah, I've had so many struggles and challenges. I mean, it's endless. I don't think we want to go into that. I'm happy to share, but it's like, you know, this could be therapy. I'm happy to talk about, you know, I remember one moment, turning 50, and my mom died that same year. And it was just like, I don't know, I just felt completely lost and overwhelmed. And it's like my body started having physical problems, and I was in grief from her death. And it was like, I had anxiety and all these problems started happening. And I was like, wait, how could this be happening to me? I've been practicing very earnestly for like 30 years. And here I am, like a total disaster. And then I just realized, you know, I'm human. That's just the nature of humanity. It's like yoga is not going to change that, right? It's about accepting that part of myself. Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. And I think that is, you know, really in itself a very accessible message, because there's probably nobody out there who can't relate to the idea of, you know, being in some kind of, you know, panic-stricken moment. We all go through that. And yoga is not a way. In fact, that's a really harmful use of yoga to try and hide from feeling. I mean, I've done that myself in all sorts of ways, you know, originally there are all sorts of really self-destructive methods that I used yoga to try and let go of. But then I used yoga to do that also. So it's definitely more welcome to admit to the fact that we struggle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it is to be human. And I don't think yoga is about denying humanity, but connecting with another part of ourselves. And I just, you know, I love that idea that we can accept our differences, our frailty, and, you know, and that's okay. That's not, that doesn't need to be fixed or changed. It's about, yoga is about something else, right? Connecting to, like I said, to this other part of ourselves. That's okay. And I think that gets confused, you know what I'm saying? That it's like, we confuse this idea of fixing rather to just reconnecting. And I think that's a different framework for the work.
Well, it's a difference between coming home and having to go on a long journey to some unknown destination way over the hill.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That's beautiful. Yeah. It's just coming home.
Yeah. Curious then, as presenting this to teachers, you know, what it was that was inspiring you to you know, kind of start again, go back to the drawing board, having already written a book really generally about this practice of accessible yoga, feeling the urge to come back with a specifically teacher-oriented guide to how to present things to make that, you know, more accessible.
Yeah. I think it was just, it's what I do all day. I train yoga teachers. And so it occurred to me that I could reach more yoga teachers that way. And that there's a message that I have for yoga teachers that's slightly different than the general public. I mean, it's still similar. It's still accessible yoga. It's still about, yeah, the way I perceive these teachings. But I just think yoga teachers are so important in this process, right? Like, they're the ones, they're like at the front lines of making this impact in the world. And I feel like they can cause so much damage. You know, they can do so much wrong.
Yeah.
And have, you know, we all have. I have too. I mean, there's been so much abuse and terrible things on behalf of yoga teachers. And I think, and yet I know so many that are incredible. I mean, I really know so many amazing yoga teachers. So I just think we need to be a little more ethical, actually, is really maybe the core of what I'm thinking about. Like, how can we really embody yoga's ethics when we're teaching and really value, maybe not value, but really understand the importance of what we're doing, you know, really that there's so much power in our position. And I think that we need to wield that power more consciously. And that's why I wrote the book, to try to just support teachers in bringing a more conscious, ethical approach to what they're doing.
One of the pillars, when you were describing what accessible yoga is at the beginning of the book, is community. And I was curious as to how that might, you know, play into the question of accountability, given that, you know, perhaps traditional lineage structures haven't shown their capacity to hold gurus to account, and also, you know, the modern capitalist yoga jungle hasn't necessarily developed its own muscles in that direction either.
Yeah, right. I do think community is the key. I don't know. I don't know the exact process, but I feel like that's the only way. I think I have. I quote Thich Nhat Hanh. You know, he says, "The next Buddha is a sangha." It's like that's the only way forward is through connection, and that's part of this book. Why I wrote this book too is to have a conversation. Actually, like I don't. I mean, I say a lot in there, but I also know that, you know, people will disagree with me, and there's more. There's a lot more to say, and I'm open to that. Like, I'd like to hear from other teachers. But going back to what you're asking, I think first it starts with us just recognizing that we're human and we're going to mess up, and then we recognize, oh wait, I do need some support to help me with that. Like you said, it's probably not going to be a guru or a teacher these days, but it could be my other yoga teacher friends, right? It could be a community that I build of people, of peer support, just people that I talk to when I need help. And it happens all the time. So actually one thing I do in the book is I share at the end of each chapter, like a scenario, which is something that's actually happened to me and, you know, where I've really struggled and not known what to do. And then I kind of give what my answer would be now. But I just know at the time, so often I would have to go to my yoga teacher friends and ask them, like, what do you think? You know, and that's just been, it's been so valuable for me to have that over the years. You know, other yoga teachers that, I mean, I might look up to them, but I don't, they're not necessarily my teachers. They're people that I maybe even learn from sometimes, but also practice along with or just have some kind of, yeah, peer relationship with. I don't see any other way. Yeah.
No, I hear you. And I guess the other question, though, is out there again in the sort of wild west of yoga, we've not really got community groups a lot of the time because everybody's out in this very competitive, everyone for himself, striving to make ends meet. There's not even in the way that there was 20 years ago, sort of established yoga schools. And yet you've built a yoga school. So I'm kind of curious as to how you found that process, sort of almost swimming against the tide in that sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been thinking about that actually. I think the accessible yoga community is actually quite small. You know, we have kind of a very tight-knit circle of people who I know that I've trained or that have trained with people I've trained. And I feel like, you know, or other teachers, great teachers like Matthew Sanford, for example, is just such a pioneer. Anyway, I mean, there's a community. We used to meet, you know, we'd have conferences before COVID. Well, during COVID, we did it online, but in person, those were really special in terms of building community. You know, that's that in-person connection is quite powerful. But I've been thinking about how do I reach this broader audience and what does that mean? And I feel like I'm definitely in my comfort zone when I work within my community. Like it's they support me, you know. And so like it's been interesting in the process of marketing this book, which has just come out. It's like, who am I talking to exactly? You know, am I just talking to my peers, basically, and to the people who already agree with me? Can I reach out kind of to the other part of that yoga? Yeah, I love what you're calling it, jungle and the Wild West. I mean, it really is, you know. Actually, you know how I do those? I do these reels where I remix some kind of intense asana thing. That has been a real eye-opening experience for me, working like just tagging or messaging these teachers who I never would connect with otherwise. And their response has been amazingly positive, actually. Like, I think most people really need that connection or want it. They just don't know how. Yeah.
Just to clarify for those who aren't extremely online,
Yes.
Jivana takes videos that people make on Instagram of themselves doing, fancy show off contortion type yoga and demonstrates how by sitting in a chair or some other, very static approach, you can actually achieve a very similar result from the point of view of, just tuning into the body. And they're quite sort of tongue in cheek and at the same time, quite serious. And it's nice that people come with the sort of seriousness, understanding the tongue in cheekness and want to engage rather than feeling
Yeah.
insulted or talked down to.
Yeah, I was worried at first, but like the reaction is almost always positive by them. Usually I would ask them first. And always they're like, yeah, I love making yoga accessible. They often these people, and I'm saying these people, and that's othering them already, but they're doing this intense practice, and yet they would say, "Yeah, I'm interested in making yoga accessible." So I think they have this ideal, like they want it, but maybe don't know how. And I think also it's about connecting, just connecting to anyone, being open to building community. I think most of us do want that in yoga. And there has been a failure, I think, of I'll say the structures that we have, like the default structures, say like of Yoga Alliance or groups like that, that really have been ineffective at supporting community building in yoga. And like you said, the guru lineage and all that has also been ineffective. I mean, there's benefit to it, but I think it barely exists anymore. So it's like, what is left? I think, to be honest, what's left for me is that individual teachers who are working within their communities and building that on kind of a small level. And that's another reason I wrote the book, is to support those teachers, because I think they are doing the work. Like, people who teach in their little town and they have a group of students who are dedicated to them and they're dedicated to their students. And that's the community of yoga, I think.
And I also appreciate, though, that you have reached out in the writing of the book, well beyond, let's say, your comfort zone, even, because you spoke to a few people whose quotes you include in the book, who would very much not almost identify themselves, at least, as accessible yoga practitioners, or be identified by those who practice with them with that label. I'm thinking particularly of Jason Crandall and Kino McGregor, no, known as strong vinyasa-based teachers of, very sort of serious asana-focused yoga, although they've got much else to offer as well. I'm wondering how both of those conversations came about, and why you chose to end the book with Kino. I was very surprised when I got there and she's in the epilogue, sort of framing the whole conclusion.
I think you already got it. I mean, I think it's just what you said. I felt, I don't know, like through this last couple of years, as I've been reaching out, kind of I keep wanting to say across the aisle, because I think about American politics, how we're just so divided here. And I think
It
it's
is
kind
so
of true.
polarized.
And I think that's just the nature of our US culture and society right now. There's so much separation. And so that's part of my interest, is like reaching out within the yoga community, which you think it would be easy to do. But I actually had Kino was the first person I made one of those mixed reels with, and she was so open to it. And we've actually kind of made a friendship over the years through a few little things. She's quite surprising. I don't know if you know her, but
I've only ever emailed her, but yes, I've
okay,
never
yeah,
actually
she puts out a
spoken.
very, yeah, like it's a very strange image of this very intense physical practice, but she's a very dedicated practitioner, really understands the heart of yoga, I think, really, really well. And she's just so dedicated to yoga. I mean, I really admire that about her. And actually, she has a new book coming out that's called Accessible Ashtanga.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is kind of funny to me. But anyway, I think she's also been a great supporter of my work, and I appreciate that. Jason Crandall, I don't really know him, but I appreciate him. Like from what I've read of him and studied, just of what he shares in the world, it always feels pretty clear. And I think he's well-meaning. And so I guess I was trying to find people that I could, find some connection with. Even though we're not exactly the same, we're dedicated to yoga teachers mostly and to teaching yoga. And like Judith Lasseter, who I think of as like, the old school, like she's really like started that. Like she did so much, she was the first person that I know who created a code of ethics for yoga teachers when she ran the California Yoga Teachers Association way back when, basically created a yoga journal. I don't know, like she's pretty incredible. So,
I guess she saw plenty in that Iyengar world of the,
oh God, yes.
70s and 80s to give her the shivers.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many other people, but I just thought, I don't know, I wanted to make a small step outward from my comfort zone. And it was fun. I'm sharing those conversations in a podcast too. So those will come out eventually. You can actually hear the full conversations I had with them if people are interested. The ones with Jason and Kino are really interesting for sure. I don't agree with everything they said, but that's okay. The other thing I was thinking about you today, actually, how it seems like in the past in yoga, there was this debate, like a what do you call it? There was a different way of approaching talking about the teachings and sharing them, which was more in a debate style, right? Where you didn't have to agree with someone. You'd actually just have a conversation, and the public debates were often how it was done, right? Am I right about that?
Thanks for tuning in to this preview. To continue listening and to get access to all archived episodes along with other perks, visit ancientfutures.substack.com.